Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Trusted news and information. That's part of WITF's mission. A new source for news that is sure to gain trust is PA Post, a digital-first, citizen-focused news organization created by WITF. PA Post makes its debut today. To talk more about PA Post and what news consumers can expect from it are our guest today, Kathleen Pavelko, WITF's president and CEO. Kathleen, always good to have you on the program.
Great to be back on this very important day.
And also joining us is WITF's multimedia news director, who will act as editor of PA Post, Tim Lambert. Tim, you just got off the air, and here you are again.
That's right. I'm glad to be here.
So if you have a question or comment as we discuss PA Post this morning, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, so Kathleen, let's start with the basics. How would you describe PA Post?
Well, if you describe it journalistically, it is digital first, meaning the content is created for use on the platforms that you prefer, your cell phone, your smartphone, your laptop, whatever it might be. It's fact-based, it's nonpartisan, and it is multimedia. So it could be text, it could be audio, it could be video. It's all of those formats, whatever makes most sense for the story we're telling. Philosophically, though, the goal here is to connect this giant fragmented state we call the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania with a truly statewide news organization where we can share the problems that we have and, I hope, share some solutions.
So how did it all come about?
You know, WITF has been in this business, covering state politics and policy, since 1964, since we went on the air. So we've been in that business for a long time. We're also in the business of networking and distributing across the state through a public radio network and a commercial radio network. But it became clear to us that distribution through analog methods, through broadcast methods, was insufficient, and we needed to be digital first and truly, truly statewide. So we looked around for some models, and we're going to hear a little bit more about one of those models later in the interview. That's the Texas Tribune. But it was very clear to us what we needed to do, and when we put together our strategic plan 2 years ago, it was right at the top of the list.
I mentioned in the introduction that today PA Post debuts. Is the website online right now?
Minutes ago, Scott, minutes ago. It's at papost.org, and it's a fabulous site. It's going to evolve, okay? This is day one. Everybody, give us just a little bit of a break, okay? But if you check the top of the website, you're going to see stories. You're going to see our podcast. You're going to see a sign-up for our e-newsletter. That's cool. It's a very clean, easily navigated website, papost.org.
So maybe during the program, as you're listening to our description and our discussion of PA Post, go to it, papost.org. You discussed this, you kind of touched on the overarching issues that we would be covering, but let's focus a little bit more. Give us some examples, the kind of focus of PA Post.
Tim, talk about the stories. We got a lot underway and a lot that we're planning.
Yeah. First of all, we are welcoming PA Post first full-time reporter today, Ed Mann. You may know him from the York Daily Record, does some great investigative work, so we're thrilled to have Ed join us today on day one of the launch of PA Post. What you're seeing is a little bit of an evolution of what WITF has been doing over the last few years with our news department. About 5 or 6 years ago, we launched State Impact Pennsylvania with our partners at WHYY in Philadelphia and NPR to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy and really take a look statewide at how natural gas drilling, coal mining, nuclear energy, solar energy sort of impacted the state, but tying it all together. One of the things to remember that what PA Post is really trying to do simply is to bring Pennsylvania to Pennsylvanians. There isn't really a true network across the state that does that. We have some great news organizations, but they're based in Pittsburgh. They're based in Philadelphia. What we're looking to do is get into those underreported stories across Pennsylvania and tie them into how it impacts you, how policy impacts you. You've seen that sort of reporting with Transforming Health. We hope to bring our health coverage to a statewide level as well. Education, we're looking at politics and policy, at accountability, the energy, the environment. So there are a lot of stories that we hope to delve into in the coming months.
When you say underreported stories, and most of the time when something's underreported, it's just based on time, space, resources, that kind of thing. Give an example, though, of underreported stories that PA Post will be covering.
I don't want to give away too much here, but what we're trying to do is we're going to try to look at stories that, look, it's no secret that the media industry has been undergoing a lot of change, both good and bad, and the bad part of that is boots on the ground have been lost. There have been severe staff reductions at media organizations across the Commonwealth due for various reasons, and we're trying to fill the gaps now and to take a look at stories that aren't being looked at. There is a small but powerful reporting group at the state capitol in Harrisburg. Those guys do a lot of great work, guys and gals. This is a little bit of a reinforcement. They can't get into every single story that happens. So we are going to try to take a look at trends, maybe what state agencies are doing a little more, follow the money a little more as well. So I think that PA Post is evolving, but that's what we're going to kind of focus on, especially with the election coming up in November.
Kathleen, you mentioned, and Tim just talked about this too, what other media organizations are doing. Two questions. One is, how is PA Post different than what other media organizations are doing? And two, there are partnerships involved with PA Post. Let's start with what's unique about this.
PA Post is different from many of the other digital news organizations that are out there because in addition to creating our own content and distributing it through a variety of both commercial and non-commercial media partners, we will also create content and, we will also distribute content from select partners. So we will provide a distribution network for some of the most talented news organizations who are at the moment limited to their region. So that could be the Philadelphia Inquirer. It could be the Philadelphia Post-Gazette. It could be the Patriot News right here. But their best content distributed statewide. We'll work on stories together, too. The biggest stories really require that kind of collaboration. We're also going to have a very robust events and face-to-face process. We will be talking to the citizens in Pennsylvania and listening to the citizens of Pennsylvania. That's critical. And you know what? We're gonna sneak in some media literacy and some civics education throughout. People really need to understand the legal underpinnings, for example, of particular policies. And we're going to make sure that that context and that background is provided in a way that's fun as well as educational.
You mentioned right up front that there are a lot of issues, a lot of stories that we can't cover just from a broadcast standpoint. But with PA Post, there's more than just the online component.
Oh, absolutely. We have an existing public radio network. There are 7 public radio stations in Pennsylvania and 1 in New York that carry the work that we currently do. Katie Meyer is our state bureau chief. And we have a commercial radio network that will serve as a promotional partner for radio PA Post. So we've got mechanisms layered on mechanisms, formats layered on formats, distribution mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously, this is something that is unique and new to Pennsylvania, but I have to say that, just from what I've observed with all the planning that has gone into place over the last year or so, maybe even longer than that, that there are some other models out there.
Look, we shamelessly stole a great core idea. Okay, we borrowed it. From the Texas Tribune. Evan Smith is the CEO of the Texas Tribune, and as we investigated what they had done in Texas, based in Austin but serving that gigantic state 9 years ago, it was clear to us we had a lot to learn. And in addition to being generous with his staff time, Evan came and spent a whole day with board and staff here last December.
And Evan Smith is on the line with us right now. He is the president and founder of the Texas Tribune. Mr. Smith, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning all, and how happy I am to be here on your big day. Congratulations to all of you guys and everybody in Pennsylvania.
Well, congratulations to you, because the Texas Tribune, since you were here last December, and as Kathleen described, that we have been borrowing your model, we all in our content department have been looking at the Texas Tribune on a regular basis, and just a fantastic site and so much news. How did this all come about in 2009 for you?
Well, it's a lot of what you just heard from my friends in Pennsylvania about the lack of news or the lack of enough, the problem of not having enough news and enough news coverage are really important issues for the people of the state, and deciding to step up and try to solve that problem. I looked out at the landscape here, a state that is growing quickly and changing dynamically, where the issues are getting more complicated, not less, more complex, not less. We care about the same things you all care about, public education, transportation, healthcare, immigration. And yet the number of reporters at our state capitol was dropping pretty quickly. The number of news organizations covering this stuff was dropping pretty quickly. It was clear that the for-profit model for covering this kind of news was not working, and so we needed to create a new one. And we stood on the shoulders of public radio and public television in creating a nonprofit organization funded ideally by the stakeholders, by the end users, individuals, corporations, and corporate sponsors, to go out in the world and do this work regardless of whether you could make a buck off of it. Because even if something is not profitable, that doesn't mean it's not important or valuable for the community. That was the premise. Again, very much like what I'm hearing from you all about the need in Pennsylvania and the innovative solution you've come up with, we said these are not issues that can go uncovered. We've got to figure out a way to do this, and so we got a group together to start and said we're going to make a go of building a new model for content and a new model for the business side. We are almost 9 years into this, what I still consider to be an experiment, although it's succeeding. We've certainly not succeeded finally yet, but it's succeeding. We went from 17 full-time employees, 11 reporters on the first day at our big capital here in Austin, to about 80 full and part-time employees and 35 or more reporters at any given time in our newsroom. We still have the most reporters covering a state capital of any news organization now in the entire country, for-profit or nonprofit, fifth straight year. And we have raised enough money to make this a sustainable enterprise. We can do this kind of public service journalism. We can afford to pay for it. We can hire great people. We can do accountability journalism for the people of Texas, as I know you will do for the people of Pennsylvania.
You know, Evan, the success of the Texas Tribune, the development of the business model that, as you say, is succeeding and you're continuing to work on it, was an inspiration. The quality of the work that the Texas Tribune does, plus the sustainability that you've demonstrated, really gave my board and my staff and me the sense of confidence that we could move ahead with PA Post. The path that you've forged and are still forging really made a difference to us. Now, I just noticed that you've launched your first strategic plan from now through 2025.
Right.
And let me just say that you don't make any small plans. You're going to double practically everything that you're doing now. Have I got that right?
Yeah, you do. I think from the very beginning, our idea, we're all baseball fans here at the Texas Tribune, and our unofficial motto for this organization has been the Texas Tribune does not hit singles. That there's no point really in doing this work unless you're going to go big. And we have always had very ambitious goals, far beyond what we or anybody else thought we were capable of. And, with hard work and vision, and I think a willingness to try things, knowing that sometimes they may not work, we have been able to exceed expectations pretty consistently for 9 years. And so we're putting a marker in the ground here, on the ground, and saying we're going to double our audience between now and 2025. We're going to significantly increase our number of members. We're going to really ramp up the revenue generation here to be able to invest in technology and in other aspects of the business. From the very beginning, it's been innovation, it's been disruption, and it's been collaboration at the center of everything we do. And I hear the same thing. I mean, I've already spent some time on the PA Post site this morning. Of course, I've heard everything that you've said before today and today about what you intend to do, and I think it's very much in the same vein. You can't do things the same way that we've always done them. Running in place is not an option. You've got to work very closely with other news organizations, and I love the idea of you all creating what is essentially a distribution network for the best content of the other news organizations around the state, because you all are in this together. It's hang separately or survive together from a media bit.
Yeah, that's really the case.
And the reality is that the people of this state, Texas, and of your state, Pennsylvania, they care about what's happening in other parts of the state, and they understand that they have a stake. People in Pittsburgh have a stake in what happens in Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, pardon me, people in Philadelphia have a stake in what happens in York and in Harrisburg. You are connecting people with this organization and providing people with access to information. Low-information voters tend to be bad citizens. They tend to be non-productive citizens. what we all need in all of our communities are more thoughtful, productive, and engaged citizens. It sounds to me like you're on the way to getting that to be the case in Pennsylvania.
Mr. Smith, you know, let's face it, when Texas Tribune debuted in 2009, it was a much different media and political atmosphere than what we live in today. The media has come under a lot of criticism. We've been called a lot of things. So how important is it, and Kathleen, I want to have you weigh in on this as well, and Tim, you too. How important is it for a Texas Tribune, for a PA Post? You just said that we're all in this together. We're not competing with one another out there. We're collaborating to bring the best news and information, factual information, to the listeners, the readers, the news consumers out there. Talk about how that media landscape change has occurred over the last 9 years, and why it's so important.
Well, a decade ago, when I came into work every day, the default setting was people out in the world trusted the work of the media. Today, when I come into work, the default setting is people don't trust the work of the media. That's not specific to the Texas Tribune. It won't be specific to PA Post, but generally speaking, confidence and faith in the media's credibility has declined. Part of that is a self-own, as my teenagers say. You know, we've created this problem for ourselves, but part of it is that the world has changed and people have exploited the opportunity to make us a villain or to make us a foil. And they've gone after the media broadly and given people reason to doubt whether the work that we do is fair, thorough, and accurate. And that's a mountain that we have to scale every single day. And I think the knowledge that you have to scale that mountain, that you're hitting that default every single day, is helpful because it means you've got to work that much harder to ensure that everything that you do is exactly right, is completely fair. That's one big difference. I would just quickly add that another big difference is the technology landscape is changing so quickly. When we launched a little less than 9 years ago, there was no Instagram, there was no Snapchat. The first tablet had not been released by Apple. We thought we were on the cutting edge, and it turns out we were in the Stone Age. All this stuff is moving so quickly
that
all of us in this business have got to try to move as quickly as we can to keep up with all this change.
And Evan, to build on what you've said about the environment, there are ways to fight back on this. There are ways to reestablish trust. We think some of the ways are include transparency about who funds us. A lot of it is also what I call show your work. Tim leads a news team that on a quarterly regular basis does a story about how they did a story to explain the techniques that we use. If people don't understand how we do what we do, they won't necessarily trust the what of what we do.
And we were part of the Trusting News Project, which was a 12-week pilot program. And in fact, I'll be flying to Evan's neck of the woods in Austin tomorrow to take part with some of our Trusting News partners to assess how we were able to achieve any goals or what we came up short with in trying to explain our work and trying to explain what we may have missed or asking you for assistance and what perspective might be missing from a story. So we tried a lot of different tools to try to get our work out there and be transparent in how we do our job. So if people had an idea of how journalism actually works instead of just thinking that we sit around all day and make stories up. And that's just not how it works. I mean, it's a lot of work. Katie Meyer is in Somerset County covering the dedication of the Flight 93 Tower of Voices, and she'll be there for the commemoration event tomorrow. She was up until midnight last night getting her story just right so we could so listeners could enjoy it this morning and learn about how those passengers and crew members are being honored.
Let's take a phone call from...
I want to make one more point if I can, and that is that all news has been nationalized. There is no truly local news anymore because of the way that news is disseminated out in the world through 24-hour cable news and through social media. You know, people in Texas care about the Connor Lamb race every bit as much as people in Pennsylvania do. People in Texas care about the Bob Casey, Lou Barletta Senate race every bit as much as people in Pennsylvania do. And so it's that much more important to have a trusted, ambitious, aggressive, robust accountability journalism organization on the ground telling the stories of Pennsylvania, because truly you're speaking to a much wider audience. I just think that's maybe one other additional difference between now and 10 years ago. I don't know that was the case 10 years ago. It is absolutely the case today.
Let's take a call from Jim in Enola. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Nice to talk to you and also my friends Tim and Kathleen. I think this is a wonderful idea and extremely needed right now. Unfortunately, you know, as you all know, newspapers in Pennsylvania and elsewhere are really in decline. It was just announced that the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is not going to publish every day like the Patriot News did a while ago. And another point I want to make real quickly is I think in the minds of the public, there's just not enough clarity as to what is good objective media and what is bad biased media. To say it another way, there's too many people out there who think that WITF is the same as, say, InfoWars, and it's just not true. And the other thing I want to say is that this kind of work just doesn't come for free. I know you guys are not fundraising, but people who care about this need to do like me and support WITF. So thanks for listening to me.
All right, Jim. Thanks very much for your call.
Yeah. Look, quality journalism is maybe distributed free, but it isn't free. It's costly. And when you go to papost.org, there's a support button, and we hope you'll consider a one-time or a monthly contribution. There are all kinds of ways to connect with PA Post that I think every interaction is going to help you understand better the work that we do and trust it more. Starting next Monday, we're going to have a daily email newsletter. It's called In Context. And if you go to papost.org right now, you can sign up for it so you'll receive the very first edition next Monday. We have a newly reconfigured weekly podcast. It's called State of the State. That's going to launch September 27th. So stay tuned for each new development as it goes along. And we hope that through a variety of events, none of them quite so large as the Texas Festival, which is the Texas Tribune's premier event, but lots of panel discussions and interactions. One of our signature events is called News and Brews. And I think you know what that means.
Quite popular.
It's an informal opportunity to interact with our reporters, to talk about the issues of the day, and to enjoy an adult beverage.
And one of the things to remember, too, I think we should make clear about PA Post, is this is not going to be a daily website where you're going to get the daily grind of stories that come out from the Capitol and come out from all the different parts of Pennsylvania. This is going to be a site where you're going to have a main story, hopefully once a day. That's the goal. Deep dives over the course of several months. But also, we're going to highlight from some of our partners' work as well. But if you're going to come to the site and expect to see something every day, you know, 3 or 4 hours, there's going to be something new. That's just not what kind of site this is. We're going to take a very nuanced look at issues affecting Pennsylvania. So we want to put the time and effort into telling those stories and not have to rush through with those quick hits and, you know, go for clicks. We're looking to, you know, create conversation around our work.
PAPost.org is the website, and they encourage you, if you haven't already, to go to PAPost.org, take a look, sign up for the newsletter, and so much good information, so much coming out of this. Kathleen Pavelko, WITS President and CEO, WITS Multimedia News Director and editor of PA Post, Tim Lambert, Evan Smith, President and Founder of the Texas Tribune. Thank all of you for being with us today.
Sure, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. The Real ID Act, passed by Congress after 9/11, seeks to improve national security by ensuring that everyone has a secure driver's license and identification documents. Beginning in the spring of 2019, Pennsylvanians will be able to obtain real IDs. These IDs will be needed to board domestic commercial flights and to enter certain federal buildings and nuclear energy plants. Many people are not yet familiar with real ID. I spoke with McLaurin Klingler, a spokeswoman for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. McLaurin Klingler, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Scott. I'm glad to be here.
Let's start with some of the basic questions about Real ID. What is Real ID?
The Real ID Act was passed by Congress, and its purpose is to establish minimum security requirements for state-issued driver's licenses and IDs. So this is just so that federal agencies can only accept these Real ID compliant IDs and be confident in how secure they are.
So how did it develop? Where did it come from? I mean, I've heard some people confuse Real ID with like a national database for American citizens, a national ID card. It's not for that, though, is it?
No. So it was established after a recommendation for the 9/11 Commission, just so that we can be more secure when identifying people when they're accessing federal buildings or military bases, or as, of course, by the 9/11 Commission was created, to board commercial aircraft.
So you just touched on this, but just so I can clarify and make this clear for those listening, what will an American need Real ID for?
So just like I said, they will need the Real ID to access federal buildings, and that, like I said, includes military bases, entering nuclear power plants, and boarding commercial aircraft. But they won't need it for some things like people think, like public places, like post offices, or to vote. Those ID rules don't change.
And getting back to the question I had a little bit earlier about the confusion, does this build a database of American citizens?
So this is state by state. So no, this the states handle how they deal out, give out IDs, and how they decide how they know, if that makes sense. It's definitely state-driven as far as the ID aspect. So federally, we would not have a list of who all has this Real ID.
Have there been privacy concerns raised about this?
I think, I don't know if it's concerns or it's more just confusion. People, I mean, we understand that creating, it does feel like a federal ID, which isn't true. States still have a lot of decision making. It's just now we have a security requirement for state issued IDs.
When is the deadline for all Americans to have Real ID?
That deadline, Scott, is October 1st, 2020. So there are a couple of deadlines ahead of that. But really, the Americans should not be concerned about having a Real ID compliant ID until that 2020 deadline.
So what will be an acceptable form of identification? You mentioned driver's licenses. That's the one most people think of right off the bat. But what are the acceptable forms of ID?
So if you're looking for an alternative to a Real ID compliant ID, things like passports, a passport card, a military ID, TSA actually has a very long list on their website of all acceptable forms of ID besides the Real ID compliant ones.
But give me an example. What are some of them besides passports and driver's licenses that most people would have handy to them?
So I'm not sure if we're saying that people would have them handy. Like I said, a military ID, your government issued, like if you had a government issued ID besides like your driver's license, like if you worked in a government building. But it's a lot of kind of more specific ones. Passports are usually the most frequently used ones in, instead of a driver's license.
What if a traveler after that deadline shows up to board a plane, for example, without a compliant Real ID? What will happen?
So right now, we are really just planning on all states to be compliant by that deadline. And, I mean, we're working with states to ensure this. I think this is going to be kind of a thing we address once that time comes.
Are there any alternatives being discussed that you know of?
Well, right now, for example, we do have a deadline in 2018, October, for extensions. And with that extension, if your state doesn't get approved for an extension, we are allowing a grace period until January 2019 for you to still be able to use your non-real ID if you're in a non-compliant state. So, I mean, we're working with the states, and I'm sure we will continue to work with them and figure out ways to, no one's like terribly inconvenienced by this.
I'm sure that most people to comply with Real ID will make use of their driver's licenses, but there are those who won't. And the one group I think of are those under the age of 18, maybe those who haven't obtained a driver's license yet. What about those who travel who are under the age of 18?
So if you are under 18, it's going to be you don't have to provide identification when traveling with a companion, and the companion will need an acceptable ID, just like traveling right now.
But we do know that there are families out there that sometimes send a young person under the age of 18 on an airplane you know, to meet with grandparents or other relatives or travel somewhere. What kind of ID will they have to have if they are not traveling with a companion?
So Real ID does give out government IDs that are, I mean, under 18, just like we'd give out government IDs now. So they would need that, or like a passport or another acceptable form of ID.
We're going to be talking in just a few minutes with someone from Pennsylvania about how Pennsylvania is complying with Real ID. What should Americans be asking their state about Real ID?
I feel that Americans, if they're in a state that is already fully compliant, they should be asking their state, you know, how this changes, maybe reach out to their DMV and figure out what they need to get a real ID, compliant ID. If their state is currently in an extension, people could feel free to reach out to their state government just about, you know, where they are in the process. But people mostly, I think, should just be concerned about how they obtain a Real ID once their state becomes compliant, or at least issuing the Real ID compliant licenses.
McLaren Klingler is a spokeswoman for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Pennsylvania will be implementing Real ID. Joining us now is Kurt Myers, the Deputy Secretary for Driver and Vehicle Services with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. Mr. Myers, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so Secretary Myers, where does Pennsylvania stand in implementing Real ID?
Well, we've been working very diligently over the last year. As you may be aware, Pennsylvania was actually restricted by state law from participating in Real ID. It was a law that was passed back in 2012, and that law was repealed in May of 2017. So, from 2017, May of 2017, we've been working diligently to implement Real ID. I think it's important to understand for your listeners, and that is that Real ID is optional. You, as a citizen of the Commonwealth, are not required to get a Real ID, and in fact, there may be reasons why you simply don't need a Real ID, especially if you're not someone who flies on commercial aircraft on a regular basis. That's a decision, though, that each individual needs to make. And our website has a wizard on it. You can go on and answer the questions that are associated with it, and at the end, it'll tell you whether or not, based upon your answers, whether or not you really need a Real ID or not. From the standpoint of our progress to this point, we expect to implement Real ID on March 1st of 2019, when Real IDs will be available for those individuals who would like a Real ID. And in the build-up to that, we're doing as much work as possible to pre-vet individuals who are interested in getting a Real ID. From the standpoint of the initial phase, years ago, back in 2003, we began to image the documents that people presented for the purposes of getting a driver's license and or an identification card. And so we were able, based upon that, about 35% of our population here in Pennsylvania, we were able to reach out to those individuals with a postcard. We sent a postcard back in March of this year, letting them know that they could pre-vet. And all they really needed to do was go online. There was a site on our website where they could give some basic information. And then we're in the process right now of checking our records to see whether or not we have all the needed documents on hand. And if we do, then we send them an email or a text back letting them know that we have all the documents that we need. And when Real ID is available, all they'll need to do is go online, pay the one-time fee of $30 plus a registration renewal fee, And then at that point in time, we'll mail them the new product, the Real ID product.
I'm sure that you have questions. So if you have a question for Kurt Myers, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. You can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. March 2019 is the first date that was mentioned, pre-verification, so you may have a question about that. But 2020 is the ultimate deadline for this. Now, a few things from that interview I had with DHS, Department of Homeland Security, I had a few questions. She talked about states seeking extension. Is Pennsylvania one of those states? What is she talking about?
We are. And in fact, we are currently under an extension from the Department of Homeland Security through October 10th of 2018. On August 16th of this year, the governor sent a letter to Homeland Security requesting an additional extension. We expect to hear back shortly. We've had an ongoing working relationship with Homeland Security in relationship to Real ID since our law was changed. We're very confident that we will receive an extension. And we would expect that that extension would be for an additional year. Normally, Homeland Security only gives an extension for a one-year period of time. And again, I think the important point here is that by March of 2019, Real IDs will be available for our customers. And that will really give them from March of 2019 all the way to October 1st of 2020. That was mentioned by the representative from Homeland Security. That is the critical date, October 1st, 2020. That's the date when, after that point, you'll need a Real ID for federal purposes as defined by Real ID. And that's very, very specific in that definition. And the definition is specific to that commercial aircraft, boarding a commercial aircraft, and or entering a federal building that currently requires an ID, and or a nuclear power plant that is owned by the federal government.
What will a compliant Real ID driver's license look like compared to what we have or the standard driver's license?
It won't look much different than what the current driver's license is today. The difference will be a gold star that will be on the license, and that's just simply for quick reference for TSA and others when they're looking at a Real ID to know that it has gone through the entire vetting process required under Real ID and the regulations.
You mentioned that it is optional. And that you do have some questions and answers on your website. What is that website, by the way?
It is www.dmv.gov.
Okay, that's easy to remember. But you mentioned that it is optional. What about those cases, though, where someone says, well, I really have no occasion to fly, but something does come up, an emergency, a family emergency, or something like that? How quickly can it be turned around that someone can obtain a Real ID compliant license?
It's one of the areas that we've been focused on over the last few months in reference to planning. Your listeners may be aware of the fact that we are in the process right now of adding five new driver licensing centers to the Commonwealth. Here in the Harrisburg area, there will be a new location in Somerdale, just across the river, and there will also be a location in Lancaster County. And the reason that we're adding these five new sites is, number one, we fully expect that about 25% of the population in Pennsylvania will decide to opt in for a Real ID. Now, obviously, that's going to increase the number of individuals potentially visiting one of our centers. And so we wanted to be sure that we built enough additional locations to allow for that increase in customer volume. In addition to that, we're retrofitting six other sites that are currently in existence. And the reason for these 11 sites, the five new, the six retrofitted sites, is precisely for the question you raise. You may have an individual who decided early on not to get a real ID, but at some point in time in the future has a particular situation where they have to get on an airplane the next day or even that day for that matter. And these sites will be able to issue a real ID over the counter, if you will. So you'd be able to take in your identification, show that to one of our staff. They'll be able to vet that information, and you'll be able to get your picture taken and walk out with a real ID.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest during this portion of the program is Kurt Myers, the Deputy Secretary for Driver and Vehicle Services with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. We're talking about Real ID and some dates and answering some questions that you may have about Real ID. I'm sure there are some questions out there. We have about 8 minutes left in the program, so if you'd like to ask a question, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I want to clarify something, the website. We forgot a few letters there when we mentioned the website, the web address for going to PennDOT's website. What is that website?
It's www.pa.org.
No, that's the whole thing.
DMV, yeah. Okay. Oh, there's a Real ID website. I apologize. Yes, on the website that you can go and just click on Real ID, and it'll take you right to that site.
Okay, and we'll put a link to on our website, WITF.org, that you can go to it as well. Something you said a little bit earlier that I don't know. I kind of estimated it would be more than that. You said 25%. You estimate that 25%. Of Pennsylvanians will opt for Real ID? Why that figure?
Well, we've been working closely with other jurisdictions and discussions about the implementation of Real ID, and what we've seen across the country is an adoption rate of approximately 25% for those jurisdictions that have an optional program. There are some states that require Real ID, but again, Pennsylvania is one that is simply an opt-in program. And so for other states that have already implemented it, it's approximately 25%.
I asked the question of Department of Homeland Security about privacy, and you know, there are some people saying, well, the government's going to create a database. Will this be used for any other purpose in Pennsylvania other than identification for what we've laid out, commercial flights, government buildings?
It is specifically for the issuance of Real ID, and most of the data that we are collecting for the purposes of vetting an individual is information, as I noted earlier, that we in Pennsylvania have been collecting and verifying since 2003. So really there isn't a difference in that respect for our customers when they come to us. They're still going to need to show us a Social Security card. They're still going to need to show us a birth certificate with a raised seal. And they'll also still need to show us two forms of address verification. So there really isn't a major change from that standpoint. And so from the standpoint of a customer coming in, they won't see much of a difference.
Let's take a phone call from Stephanie in Harrisburg. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I have a non-driver's license. Will the real whatever you're calling it.
Real ID.
Can that be applied to a non-driver's license?
Absolutely, yes. You'll be able to get an identification card that is Real ID compliant, just like a driver's license.
Okay, because I'm blind, so I get a non-driver's license. Can you do that with a non-driver's license?
Yes, absolutely. And again, as I noted earlier, it's a one-time fee, whether it's a driver's license or identification card. It is a $30 one-time fee plus the registration fee. I do want to note to your listeners as well that what will happen in that case is that any remaining time you have on your current driver's license will be added to your Real ID. So you won't lose anything from the standpoint of the money that you've already paid in for that existing license. We'll be adding any time that's left on that license to your new Real ID.
I want to follow up on something that I talked with the DHS about, and that is for someone who doesn't have a driver's license, and you just touched on this, but for someone who has never passed the driver's test, has not got the driver's license, what about that?
Well, Pennsylvania has a law that anyone who is 10 and older can qualify for an identification card. So if you have someone who's 10 years old or older, they can come into any one of our driver licensing centers with the appropriate paperwork, which I noted earlier, and they can get an identification card from the department. And of course, those identification cards are available for anyone over the age of 10, up to and including individuals who are certainly over the age of 16, who have some, for whatever reason, decided or don't qualify to be able to get a driver's license.
Let's take a call from Dan in Hanover. Dan, you're on the air.
Morning.
Morning.
My driver's license renews in the year 2020. The question was, will those who have their licenses renewed 2020 or after automatically get a real ID as part of that process, or will they have to do something additional so that their renewed license after that will be a real ID?
Well, there's really two choices here. And again, this is where the wizard comes in on our website. But from the standpoint of an individual, if you have a license that's expired in 2020, the first question that I would ask is, does the individual have a passport or an ID card, the passport card? The two most normal forms of identification that people utilize on a commercial aircraft, especially for overseas travel, obviously. If the individual has that, then there's probably no need to do anything until that 2020 date. But to answer your specific question, yes, you will need to have your documents vetted. Now, the next question for you is, did you receive your initial license, driver's license, or identification card from 2003 and after? If you did, we may already have all those documents. And we can verify that. There, you can go on our website, put in some basic information. We'll text you back, email you back with confirmation that we have all the information, and you'll simply be able to apply for the real ID online in advance of that 2020 date, or you'd be pre-vetted so that you could receive it when you go to renew.
Thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Diane in Harrisburg. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. It's Diane. I wanted to know whether or not the Real ID application is available to be applied for now.
You can pre-vet now, and what I mean by that is, and again, it's a separation between post-2003 or pre-2003, but before 2003, we didn't collect the data that we need to verify whether or not you're Real ID compliant. In that case, you would need to take that information, and again, that's the birth certificate with the raised seal, the Social Security card, and the two forms of identification. For address, and take that to any one of our 71 driver licensing centers in Pennsylvania. And that starting now, so you can get pre-vetted, and so that when the real ID is available, you'll simply be able to go online, and we'll be able to mail you a real ID in the mail.
Thank you very much for your call, Diane. We only have about 30 seconds left. I want to thank you very much. I'm sure there are other questions out there. In fact, Bill had one that I don't have time to get to with, but he says he's not sure if he has a seal on his birth certificate. Will this prevent him from obtaining a real ID?
The birth certificate is required to have a raised seal on it, and if he does not have that, then he'll have to get a replacement document.
And one that has a raised seal on
That's
it.
Correct.
Okay, so just in about 15 seconds or less, what should people know going forward?
Well, know that we're working very diligently to be in a position to be able to issue real IDs by March of 2019 for those who decide to opt in.
Kurt Myers is the Deputy Secretary for Driver and Vehicle Services with PennDOT. Mr. Myers, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we take a look at anxiety and mental health. That is on tomorrow's Smart Talk, so be sure to tune in.